Welcome to the Mompreneur Nation podcast. You found your tribe for all things motherhood and entrepreneurship. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, everyone. Today we have the honor of meeting and hearing from my amazing friend, whom I've never met in person, but have been like besties for a long time. That's the beauty of mompreneurship. This is Kaylee Giacome. Kaylee, welcome to the show.
Megan, thank you for having me today.
Oh, great. I'm so honored to have you. So tell me a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So my name is Kaylee Giacome. I am a mom of two, and I have a law firm. I'm an attorney. I have a business law firm where I practice trademark and copyright law. And I also have a contract template shop. So that is contracts for service providers and the whole gamut from photographers to coaches to graphic designers, pretty much any service provider, contracts for them so they can protect their business. And then we also have all the boring legalese documents that you need in your business. So if you have a website, policies that you need for that, course membership terms and conditions, all that sort of stuff. So I live in outside of St. Louis currently. I'm originally from New Jersey. I work part-time and then we hybrid homeschool part-time. Every time I say that out loud, I have another voice in my head that's like, you're a psycho. Why are you doing this? But that is what I'm doing. Yeah. So it is, it's one of those things where I question it on a frequent basis and then I keep choosing it. So
you just keep doing it. So talk to me about the hybrid homeschool thing. Like, what does that look like?
Yeah. So it actually really is working well. And the reason that I keep choosing it is because it is what I want. There are just things that are hard about it, but there are things that are hard about any choice. Yep. So my daughter is in first grade. I have a son who is 2 years old. So it's my daughter that we're hybrid homeschooling. So she goes to, it's a private classical Christian school, but she goes part-time. And then the other days are called satellite days and she's doing school at home, but it's not virtual. So it's, I'm her teacher. So at school, she has a teacher, she has one curriculum. And then at home, you can think of it as like robust homework. So they provide the curriculum and we have robust homework that we do on her home days. And so the reason that we chose that, there were a couple of reasons that we wanted to homeschool. This particular school we really like. And I have a law firm. I don't want to homeschool full time. I don't have any desire to do that. And even if I did have that desire, it's not possible, or I would have to, not work, I presume. So this works well for us because it's kind of like the best of all worlds. And really the homeschooling part is going well. The downside is that her school is quite a drive. So it's not like her school is 5 minutes around the corner. We really have a commute to school on those 2 days that she goes. So that's the main downside. But it definitely allows us to spend a lot more time together. My son goes to a Mother's Day Out program on the days that my daughter goes to her school. And then I work either at a co-working space near her school, or sometimes I might just go to a coffee shop. And yeah, it's working well. So when we're at home, we have chickens and ducks and cats and dogs. And that's kind of like part of our homeschool curriculum, is her taking care of our, I don't know that I would call them farm animals, but, and so the funny thing about my hybrid life is what the algorithm of social media thinks of me. And what it does is it targets me both for sourdough recipes and building seven-figure businesses, which, as you can imagine, can feel like a huge mental load.
But it sounds accurate. It actually worked. My friend told me just the other day, I was sending her a text or a screenshot of some outfit from Shein. And she's like, your algorithm is telling on you. Like all these things that you keep sending. I'm like, but this is my life. It's just crazy random. It's just all over the place. But the chaos is very normal. And it's very simple. That's all there is to it.
I love that the algorithm is telling on you. It's like, you, Kaylee, are Strange Duck, and I got your number. So here's some posts that you might like.
I love that. I didn't realize you guys had all the animals. This must be new.
We moved a year and a few months ago outside. So we were like in the thick of the suburbs, and we moved to a more rural area, which is why we have the commute now to go back to that school that's closer to the city that we liked. So then, you know, we thought, let's just get some live poultry over here because we have some room for them now. Wow. And so my daughter will go and get like the fresh eggs. And there have been a couple times, I didn't grow up in a rural area and I didn't grow up with chickens, but there have actually been a couple times where I went to bake something and I was like, oh, I need an egg. Oh, Grace, can you go out to the coop and get me an egg?
Things you never thought you would say out loud. Can you go outside and get an egg from the chickens on the coop? Yeah. Okay. That's what I just said out loud. I love that. I love that. So tell me about your journey into entrepreneurship, because you started and got your law license. You began and as a traditional lawyer, right?
Yes. So I graduated from law school in 2014, and that was the year after I got married. And when I was graduating, my husband got a job offer. My husband and I both got job offers the same week. Mine was going to be in New York, and his was with the federal government. It was actually both with the federal government, but they said you have to agree to take the position, and then we'll tell you where you're going to go. And it was a really good opportunity, but we had already spent the first year of our marriage when I was finishing law school long distance. So then we were again for another year gambling of, is he going to end up near New York? Or we were hoping DC, because it would have been easy for me to transfer to DC at that point, but he didn't. He got St. Louis, Missouri, a place I had never been to ever before. And so we spent the next year long distance as well. So I started practicing in New York at that job. I was a federal prosecutor, and then I switched to the attorney general's office in St. Louis to move out to be near him. So then I think we're like a year and a half or something like that into this marriage when we lived together for the first time. So some people look down on living together Wow. before you're getting married, but people really look down on you when you don't live together when you're married. Yeah. And it is very stressful. So, yeah. Then I was practicing. So I was a litigator. So I was in the courtroom every day in New York, and I was in the courtroom every day in St. Louis. And then I got pregnant with my daughter, and I knew that not only did I not want to be in a courtroom, but I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom, actually. Like, mm-hmm. I wanted to be a full-blown stay-at-home mom, at least when she was a baby. And so the thought in my mind at that time was, I want to spend her first year with her. And I had no plan on starting my own business at all. I just resigned from my job to stay at home with her for a year. And when people would ask me at that time, like, if what my plans were to go back or what I was going to do, I did not want to talk about it, because I was in a huge, I was just like in huge denial that this wasn't going to continue forever. And then I thought that I probably would have to go back to work. And I, again, wasn't thinking about starting my own business. And I assumed that if we had another child, that I wouldn't have that opportunity again, you know, of just boomeranging mm-hmm. and going back and forth. So I thought maybe I should just take 2 years off and have some Irish twins. But then I actually, what it was that kind of first planted the idea of starting my own business, I was at home and I was watching, I think it was something on YouTube, and there was this husband and wife team that were CPAs. And I'm like, oh, that's, they do something boring just like me, except they were doing it in Bali, because they had started this virtual practice and they were filing people's tax returns while they were, you know, in my mind on the beach in Bali, but that's what they were doing. And it occurred to me, well, I asked myself, the question, like, did I make a mistake becoming a lawyer? Should I have become a CPA? Because that then I could be on a beach in Bali now. And it was just in my mind that lawyers can't do that, because my every day was in a courtroom. So then fast forward, this was all around the same season. I met a local lawyer in St. Louis who had a trademark law practice. And going back, not to bore everyone, but during law school, all of my internship experience was in trademark law. So I was the first legal intern for the USPTO's IP attaché to Southeast Asia at the US Embassy in Bangkok. And I kind of thought that that's what I was going to do after I graduated, but I got a different opportunity. So I met him and he had a completely virtual practice. And then the other interesting thing about trademark law is it's a federal practice. So you can be licensed to practice law in only California, but you can take clients nationwide. It doesn't matter where they are. Yeah. So it really lent itself to a flexible virtual practice. And that finally, then the light bulb went off of maybe, you know, I could do something like all of these online service providers that I see. So long story short, I just took the plunge. There was no, I saw very few examples at that time. This was only in 2017, 2018. But now you have more lawyers who are in the online business space and that have social media presence. You really didn't even back then. You know, this is only 6 years ago, but there wasn't anyone that I could say, oh, I want to do what she's doing and I'm going to reverse engineer this. It was more people that I suspected might have a virtual practice, but it was kind of like lawyers would keep that as a dirty little secret almost or something. Like you needed to have that traditional brick and mortar with the website of like a court in the back with a stuffy black suit. And I saw these other service providers like website designers and coaches that had a really fun brand, you know, that I wanted to work with them, that I was attracted to their brand. And so that was kind of the beginning of, I want to do this. I want to start this virtual practice, but I don't want it to look like the, you know, stereotypical Johnson & Johnson law firm or whatever. I want to do what I see all these other service providers doing creatively in their branding in the online world. And so I did that and it worked out really well because it turns out that those brands also didn't want to work with the stuffy, you know, more boring brick and mortar law firm. They wanted to work with someone whose business they related to. And that was almost 6 years ago. And I didn't know when I would be going back to work, but now I know that the answer will be never because I can't imagine working for someone else again.
Now, I agree with you so wholeheartedly. And it's funny how like you have this vision of what life is going to look like, you know, and then you have a child and then you hit that 10 centimeters and everything just like, That's it. It's just like everything changes. I never want to be without this child again. Like I'm not leaving her anywhere. I'm not doing that. I am her caretaker. I want to do all the things. It's this crazy maternal instinct that kicks in. And it's a God-given thing, you know?
Yes. And I don't want to sound like self-righteous at all because I have, obviously, just like anybody as a mom, like I have my screaming moments. Like there's lots of not Instagram-worthy moments. So I don't mean this to sound self-righteous at all. But I will say that somehow like I had the wisdom somehow from somewhere early on that when older women tell you like, oh, you know, enjoy these days, like it goes by in a blink of an eye. And there are a lot of people and I understand why, because, you know, like the days are long, but the years fly by. I understand why, but they kind of roll their eyes at those, like, you know, those comments, but like, they not only is it true, but those older women that say that to you, they're trying to like heed their advice because they're trying to warn you almost like out of a desperation of like, it's gone for me now. Like, please, like, you know, appreciate these moments. And so on some, that's also been a huge inspiration of creating my business and, you know, and continuing to be my own boss and work part-time because I know, you know, I almost feel like I'm here, but I can feel what it feels like to be the me 15 years from now and 20 years from now. So yes, I'm an old soul. I'm a grandma soul and I'm just trying to soak it all up, even though it doesn't always look pretty.
It does not. It does not at all. I laugh when you say that. Have you less Instagram post worthy? I have a lot of those. Typically in the morning, you know, and it's just like all of a sudden, just a snap, and I'm like,
yep, getting out the door. Yeah.
But every moment, like when I look at my baby boy now and he's 3 and I just had him, I'm like,
yeah.
Everyone's like, he needs to go to school. He's going to go to school. He's going to read and write. He's going to do all those things.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to happen the same way when people say, don't let your baby sleep in the bed, which incidentally is not, you shouldn't take that for granted. And kids never get out. But like at some point, like my oldest is now 11 and she's not climbing in bed with me every night.
Yeah, anymore. They do stop. Yeah. Yeah.
It does stop, you know?
I was at a bookstore over the weekend and there was this book. It was kind of like a children's book for moms, I think, because it was about like that you never know the last. Like, you know, the first because it's, you know, you can identify the first and you can document it. But the last time, like if you're like nursing your baby, like you don't, like the last time they nurse, you don't know. And like, unless you're making a decision about it, yeah, and you're cutting them off, you probably don't know, you know, that it's going to be, or the last time they crawl in bed or something like that. You don't know when it's going to be the last. So
you just eat it up. I love those posts. And I also like hate when I scroll by it and people make this, I'm like, gosh, could you stop? I don't feel like crying today. Today, I just want to scroll, you know? I don't feel like diving deep into my emotions. I just want to scroll today. That's enough. Anyway, so you started this venture at home, which again, in 2017, 2018, it really wasn't done. The same whenever I launched Mompreneur Nation, my first thing was, what am I supposed to look at? What kind of track record? And I remember hearing very strategic from God, you know, like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make this path, which is, you know, the only way that I could have done this or started anything. But what did those first few months look like? Where did you start? How did you find clients?
Well, in the beginning, you know, if I were to start over, I'd be doing it a lot differently than I did in those first few months. Right. And actually, because, you know, I didn't have any kind of blueprint to follow or example to follow. And I was really just figuring it out as I went along. A passion project that I have, side business, because, you know, I needed another business, like I needed a hole in the head. So I now also coach other lawyers on starting their own virtual practices, which I can't stop doing, because even though that's not a huge amount of time that I spend on that, I've had like handfuls of clients now of real women who were working somewhere else, who are now, you know, at home in a part-time business that they own, practicing law. And like, it's not me that's doing it. It's them that's doing it. But yeah, it's just really exciting to play a part in that. So I teach them what I've learned since. What I was doing in those first few months, I, you know, focused on the website, which is not necessarily wrong, but what I did right, I guess, is I early on joined different Facebook groups of female entrepreneurs who are in business. Yes. And yeah. I made connections with people, and I tried to, you know, pitch myself. I did do a few podcasts, but I would say the thing that I did correctly was focus on building strategic relationships,
yep,
which is the most important thing to do. So if I were to do it again, I would still focus on that, but just more so or in a different way. But yeah, the other thing that I did right was I outsourced my social media content, which was, I think, Facebook and Instagram, like 3 months into my business. And that was good for me because I'm just not a social media person. And it's just, it takes me a long time. The result is not great. And then I don't do it. So I think if someone enjoys it and you, especially if you're doing like a lot of face to camera stuff and that's working for you, then only you can do that. But I would write legal blogs for other law firms to bring in money early on while I was, you know, still building up my my own book of business. And then I would reinvest some of those funds into hiring someone to do my social media, because I can write a legal blog article like much easier than making an Instagram reel or something like that. But that's just me.
That's just you. That's just you. That's how you do it. I would like to say, I'm glad that you joined those groups, because that's how we met.
And that is,
Yeah. I saw you, and I don't remember when it was, like a women's entrepreneur group or something, and you were posting about it. And I was like, oh, wow, she seems really cool. And then, you know, you do the typical Facebook stalker thing and go to their page and like, oh, wow, she seems really nice. And I think I sent you a message or commented or something. And then we talked and stuff. And that was like 2 years ago.
Yeah, we had
a video call. And I was like, and at that point, too, I remember us, I seriously remember us having a conversation about like both of us feeling a little bit creepy about meeting people online, you know, because it's kind of like that. And you said something that has stuck with me ever since. You're like, it's not that we met online. It's like we met like at a coffee shop and we're friends, but it just happened to like not be a coffee shop.
It was just for sure. And now it's like so normal that it's so normal that I don't know, you know, I just feel like more closely connected to people I know online than some people that I might like interact with in person. I know that doesn't probably sound healthy, but
it doesn't, but it's real. It's real. You just connect with people and you're just, I mean, it's just on a different level, you know, because like you have a lot of friends that have a fantastic community, but people who I met online or other mompreneurs, you just get each other on a different level, you know, and you just understand it on a different level. And it's so needed. And it's so just to understand you're not alone.
Like the algorithm, you know, like we're talking about kind of curating your, you know, all of your interests into the feed that you're going to be scrolling. And you, like, I have friends who are moms, but they're not business owners. And I have friends who are lawyers and moms, but they're not hybrid homeschooling business owning lawyer moms, which is a very specific kind of person. You know?
Yes. A very specific kind of duck person with, you know, sourdough bread. Yeah, it's real interesting. That is hilarious. So one of our first ventures together when we're starting a Mompreneur Nation, and I was starting groups, and we were branching out and stuff. And you talked to me about trademark law. And there were so many things in there that I had no clue I needed, you know. And since now, every time I think of something, I think of all the things you said. But one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is the legality and the legal paperwork that they need just to have a website. Right?
Right. Yep. So if you have a website, and this is really like, even if you have a basic website, there are certain disclosures that you're required to make, certain notices that you need to be put up. And you also need to handle people's data that come to your website and submit data to you in a secure way. And you need to disclose to them how you're collecting that data, how long you're keeping it. And you might be thinking, I'm not collecting any data. I don't know how long I'm keeping it, because it's not an active process, but it's the Google Analytics that you have set up, or it's, you know, a submission form that you have, or it's joining your email list or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the privacy laws in the United States are becoming more robust, but Europe kind of takes the lead and they have really strong data privacy laws. And even if they're so strong and so robust that even if you are not located in the EU, or you don't even mean to be marketing your business to anyone in the EU, all it takes for you to be subject to this law, so you are required to comply with the GDPR, which is a data privacy law in the EU, is if someone who is in the EU comes to your website and they are able to transmit data to you. So that could be signing up for your newsletter, or you have Google Analytics set up so that you can see, you know, when you go onto the back end, you can see, oh, I had, you know, X number of visitors today. That is collecting information about their IP address. And that is considered personal data in this EU law, and really most data privacy laws. So unless you have a way, there are actually technically ways for you to block IP addresses from the EU. And then technically you know, unless they had a backdoor in, you wouldn't have to comply with that. But most people aren't doing that. So if you have a website, the simple way of saying it is you are required to have these website policies. And you might think, well, I'm just a small little business. I don't think I'm a priority that they're going to come after me and enforce this. But the compliance is complaint-based. So all it takes is one Karen complaining about how you managed her personal data. And then that will prompt an investigation, which could result in a large amount of fines.
Yes. One time you said, wasn't it like $60,000? So one of the
and
fines.
It has changed. It's euros. It's millions of dollars of euros. I don't know what the top fine is now, but it has changed since this law was first implemented in, I believe it was 2018, 2019, the GDPR was implemented.
Yeah, I think that was right around the first time that you and I had that conversation. For those of you who are listening and your brain just went like that and all those big words, all you have to do is just get in touch with Kayla. Which is what I did, because when she started giving me all this information, I was just like, just tell me what to do. Just tell me, because I don't want to go to jail. That's my number one priority. I don't want to go to jail. I don't want to pay a lot of fees.
That's my number one priority.
Please just keep me out of jail, and please just keep me from getting sued. That's it. And she took it from there. There are other things too. Like at that point, I was starting a membership and you wrote the contracts for the membership and the contracts for everything else, which I was working with a client and you helped me with a contract then too. That's something also I think that people might not really take too seriously. You're thinking, oh, I'm just working with a friend, or I'm just working with, or I'm just doing small business and stuff. And it can maybe even come across as I don't trust you. But the truth is, whenever you are working with someone, you're actually protecting your relationship and protecting your friendship by putting things in writing, right?
Yes. To be unclear is to be unkind. And I think that whether it's in business or something else, anyone listening can think of a family situation. Hopefully it wasn't you directly, but maybe it was like an aunt and uncle, you know, that where someone has a falling out. Again, doesn't it need to be about business? Sometimes, unfortunately, it's about inheritance or, you know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But family problems and friend problems with friends can be the same way. Are often much stickier and difficult to like untangle and resolve than problems between strangers. And when you have a contract in place that just simply lays out, here's what you are responsible for, here's what I'm responsible for, it allows you to just, you know, point to that document and remove a lot of the emotion. And before there's even a problem, it just makes sure that everyone is on the same page, because I think the majority of conflicts are born in misunderstandings.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So putting that down in writing, and you know, what does that look like exactly? You know, let's say I have, I have a contract that I'm working with another client. What would the steps of that look like working with you?
So I do some custom contracts, but I now have like a very large library of contract templates, which is typically a better like price point for most people, especially in small business, if we have a template that fits your needs. So that's on Contractista. And really, there's so much there that for the most part, you will probably find something that does fit your needs. We have speaker engagements, service contracts for all sorts of different specific niches, independent contractor agreements. So if you're hiring like a team member, if you're hiring a VA and you want to be the one to provide the contract to them, we have that. So those are just digital products. Also the website templates that we were just talking about. All of that is done for you and has the information that you need to just download, make a couple tweaks, adding your business name in, and then upload that to your website. So for me, just like I was saying, social media is not my thing. It's a lot easier for me to just write a blog article. And if I wanted to earn money on the side, it is easier for me to write data privacy terms and conditions than it is to design a website. So my website is a website template. And so this is a contract template or, you know, website policy template for you. If that's not your thing and you want to make sure that you're covered and it's a simple, you know, copy paste upload.
Yeah. And it is literally just that simple. The copy paste upload makes life so much easier to deal with. Okay. So the other thing that we worked together with is on a trademark, right? Because when I was beginning, I wanted to make sure that I was protecting my brand, that this, I wasn't going to run into any other issues, you know. And I remember you talking to me about another business that had, you know, set up their whole business and everything only to realize that the name that they had chosen had already been chosen somewhere else. And they had to like go through the whole rebrand process. And
yeah. And that is not a one-time thing. And I would say that the longer I'm practicing, it's just kind of been the natural shift of things. The longer I've been practicing, the more that like a bigger part of the work I do is in trademark conflicts and problems than proactive registrations, which at this point I couldn't say. It might be 50-50 or perhaps more proactive filing. So that would be like proactive. I mean, you have a business name, Mompreneur Nation. We want to register the copy, the trademark to this, and we want to have a federal registration. So you have exclusive rights to that. No one else can use it. If there's a copycat account on Facebook or Instagram, the Meta wants to see your registration certificate. So they don't want to concern themselves with, oh, who was using this name first in commerce? You know, these are just customer service people. They don't want to have liability for keeping infringing content up. So they want to see who has the certificate, who has the registration certificate, and they're going to go with that person being the superior holder of the name, rights holder of the name. So there are a lot of reasons why you do want to make sure the name is available and then register and protect it, because the cautionary tales are what I'm increasingly spending more of my practice on. And so like just, it's not just that one story. It's like countless files over here of if, you know, he or she had just done this. And, yeah. You know, I would say not to name names. I don't need to name names because there are more than one name to name. but, you know, I launched this business and went all in on branding and Facebook ads and all of this stuff. And I didn't even bother to search if this name was registered. And it doesn't even need to be registered. Some people will go on to the government database and they'll say, oh, it's not registered. It doesn't need to be registered. It needs to be, it's the question is who was using it first in commerce. And so on some level, that can be a little bit of like finding a needle in a haystack, but you need to do some degree of due diligence as much as you can to make sure that someone's not going to come out of the woodwork. And then it also doesn't need to be the identical name. So it can be a confusingly similar name. It could be a synonym. And the government database has such a poor search engine that it's not going to pull up any synonyms for you. It's not going to pull up spelling variations or anything like that. So searching it and seeing that it's not registered does not answer every question that you need to before you start using a name. So I have not just one current client that I'm like today I will be working on this, but more than one that if they had done that due diligence, they wouldn't be in the situation they're in now, which for some people could be a rebrand, like a forced rebrand. Ugh. And depending on what kind of business you're in and how long you've been in business, the price you pay for that can be greater.
So. Yeah. It's not a simple cost whenever you're looking into like actually branding your business and stuff. And it just takes one little thing, just one little decision. Let me go do a quick search. More importantly, just call Kaylee and let her do the search. Because like you said, people use different names. You can say hangers and one has an S and one has a Z, or, you know, right. and be conflicting, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk to us about what it's like when people first start their business. what your suggestions or their first step look like?
So if you are a service provider, then you have to have a contract. You know, if you're going to, you can register your business as an LLC, or you can act as a sole proprietor. There are advantages to either, and I don't know if we want to get into that, but if you're a service provider, at the end of the day, depending on, especially if you're in the virtual space, I would care less about whether you are an LLC or a sole proprietor than do you have a strong contract. Because your LLC, what that does for you is it separates your business liabilities from your personal liabilities. So you, if your business is sued, they can't come after your personal assets, like your house, but your contract can prevent you from having liability in the first place.
Okay. Yeah.
So that is, and that's only one reason why it's important to have a contract. So if you're a service provider, you have to have a contract, and you want to make sure that that's drafted by an attorney. And you also, as much as you can, want to make sure that it's also tailored to your niche. So a coach needs very different clauses in their contract from a web designer, and you know, so on and so forth. Besides that, if you are using, if you're not using your personal name for your business, if you're using your personal name and you're not creating a special name for your business, then you don't need to worry about whether your name is available or you're committing trademark infringement or anything like that. So if you were just going to be Megan Kelly and that was the name of your design business, that would be fine. But if you're creating a name and you're making one up, then you really need to first make sure that it's available. And of course, I would recommend that you work with a trademark attorney to do a comprehensive search, because if you DIY it, there's a very good chance that you will miss something. But if that, if you do have to DIY it, then you want to write your business name out, and you actually want to, you know, open a thesaurus online or whatever and write down every synonym that you can think of. And don't just search the name, search the synonyms, search like changing the words in their order. If there is, like you mentioned, like an S, replace it with a Z. If there's a K, replace it with a C, the phonetically similar words. And it will be a lot more manual and intensive. But at least, at the very least, do that. And then, of course, I also do recommend that if you have a name that is not your own name, it's a business name, and you are moving forward with it and you like the name and you plan on continuing to use it, be the first to register it. Because even though it's the first to use the mark that determines who has superior rights, if you register your, if someone else registers your business name before you, then instead of having a very simple process of just registering yours, you have to either rebrand yourself, even though you were using it first. Now you're in a situation where you have to rebrand, or you can petition to cancel their trademark registration, which is a process that can be very expensive, is tens of thousands of dollars. It can take 2 to 3 years. Most small businesses aren't in a position to do that, so they will rebrand instead. So
yeah,
registering your business name as a federal trademark ensures that you will not be in a situation of a forced rebrand for the name that you were using first because someone else beat you to it.
Yeah. But, I mean, I remember when we went through the trademark process, it was about a year and a half before it was finalized. So it does take a while to, you know, to go through that. So the sooner you do it, the better. Give us a quick breakdown of the difference between LLC and sole proprietor, because when we first started, I just was like, when you're starting a business, especially when you're creative, right here, you know, you're like, I just want to do this. I want to help people. You are not thinking about all the other things that come along with it, all things you got to register and all stuff. So give us a quick breakdown of what the difference is and what you prefer.
Sure. So a sole proprietor is just an individual offering services or goods in the marketplace. So if you don't take any additional steps to create a business or register a business, then the default is that you are a sole proprietor. And the benefit of that is that there's no barrier. You just have to offer your services or goods in the marketplace. And that means you're a sole proprietor doing business. And then the downside is there's no separation between you and your business legally. So if your business is sued, then your personal assets could be in jeopardy of being used to satisfy a judgment. And then also the reverse is true. So if you are driving your car and you are negligent, you get involved in a car accident and you are sued personally, you know, everyone's situation is different. You might not have any business assets, but let's say you're a photographer and you have a lot of expensive equipment, but you don't really have any, you know, like your judgment proof is what they call it. You have no assets. You don't really have any money personally besides your equipment. When you're a sole proprietor, your business assets can be used to satisfy a judgment. So when you form an LLC, it's like you had a business baby. It's a separate entity. It's separate from you. And the downside of that, there are really few downsides. There are filing fees associated with creating the LLC. In most states, it'll vary, but it's typically between $80 to $140 to create the LLC. And then every year you need to file an annual report, which is also typically very simple. Most of it is e-filing. You're just, you know, maintaining that your contact information is still the same, a couple questions about if ownership has changed, and then you're paying your annual fee, which again is usually under the $100 mark. So there aren't really any disadvantages to becoming an LLC if you can afford to do so. And then the legal advantage is that if you're sued personally or your business is sued, that your assets are separate. You're not legally the same. Then I'm not a tax expert, but once you reach a certain level of income in your business, there can be tax benefits to being an LLC that is treated as an S corp for tax purposes. So before we just won't go down that rabbit hole, but suffice to say, if you're an LLC, legally you're an LLC, and then for tax purposes, you can choose whether you want to be an LLC that's treated like a sole proprietor for taxes, or if you want to be an LLC that is treated like an S corp for tax purposes. And there are tax advantages to being an S corp. There are also fees associated with it. So you have to put yourself on payroll. And for most people, there are going to be some fees associated with that, especially if you want a CPA to be helping you run all of that. And you need to have a certain level of business income for the savings, the tax savings, to be greater than your cost of being on payroll and managing all of that. You also have to pay unemployment taxes and things like that to yourself. It's kind of like a weird, especially when you're the only, the only employee, it's kind of a weird situation. But for most people, it will depend on like your household income and other variables. But for a lot of people, that income level is probably lower than you think it's going to be. And like, it could be, you know, even at $40,000 or $50,000, it's going to make sense for you to be an S corp. You're going to pay less in taxes at the end of the year, because, and this is the last thing I'll say about the taxes, because when you are a sole proprietor, you have a self-employment tax where they're basically treating you, they're taxing you as the employer and as the employee, and you're paying both of those. And essentially the same is true when you're an LLC and an S corp, but now you're able to deduct all of the expenses, all of those fees that the employer pays as a business expense. And it's kind of, if you're not a math person, which I'm not, it just feels like they write something down and they cross it off, and it's like, oh, this is an expense, but it's imaginary, because you're like, wait, but you still had to. Anyway, it works out somehow. And I encourage you to speak to your CPA and financial advisor, look at your total situation and your income. Because again, once you're nearing like that, you know, 50,000 or so, you might experience some tax savings. And then the more money you make, the more you save.
Yeah.
The more you pay too. So, but the less you would pay if you were a sole proprietor.
That is, all of that is like unbelievably important. And that's why it's a benefit to hire a CPA, hire Kaylee.
Yeah.
Say, you do it. You do it. You just, thank you. Just again, two goals. I don't want to get sued. I don't want to go to jail. Just make it happen for me. That's all I got. All I got. I love that. And tell everyone how they can get in touch with you if they would need help or contract visa. Give us all the deets.
Yeah. So if you need a contract template, anything like that that I've mentioned, you can go to contractista.com. If you have a question about your business name, trademarks, or copyright, that's like if you had a photo or a blog article or something that someone has ripped off, like someone has plagiarized your work in any way. Mm-hmm. I also do that. So you can reach me and book a complimentary consultation at brandlawboutique.com/consultation. And then you can connect with me on social media on Instagram at Kaylee Giacome.
Love it. Love it. And all of those links will be down below. So in case you didn't hear them, just scroll down and you can click any of those links and find Kaylee. Kaylee, thank you so much for all of this knowledge. Thank you for just sharing all your beautiful random algorithm life with us. We love it. We appreciate it. If you need to get in touch with Kaylee, scroll down and the links are below. You guys have a fantastic day.
Thank you, Megan.
You're welcome.